Here's a stupid analogy, but I like to use it because it's how I think about the business. It's really just to simplify it. Let's say that you're a new airline or you have a new airline route that you want to go from Houston to Paris, and you're short of pilots to fly, you know, the big Dreamliner or the big Airbus, you know, from here to there. It's a different operation. So what we do is we go look for people that have been flying 737s most of their career. They're deeply passionate about flying and they're really good at it. And all we need to do is just kind of upskill them in a short period of time just to fly a different airplane. It's still piloting. It's still flying. That's what we do. So if you think about just the evolution of technology and the things that we're doing, all we're doing constantly at Intelligence is just upskilling people in the shortest possible time.
You're listening to the ISF podcast for your organization's better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. In today's episode, Steve speaks with Steve Satterwhite, the founder and CEO of Intelligence and author of Above the Line: How the Golden Rule Rules the Bottom Line. He shares some simple but fresh ideas about how to find the right person for the right role, how to overcome the skills shortage, and why putting people first is the key to successful cybersecurity.
Steve, it's great to have you on the podcast. Thanks so much for making time to talk to us today. I was intrigued by your profile. You spent a significant amount of time in leadership roles. You were at Deloitte for a period of time. And then I think it was back in 1997, you set up a company called Intelligence. Tell us a little bit about that. What was the problem that you were trying to solve when you founded that company?
Well, I've been 35 years in this industry. I started in the enterprise space when two PCs connected to a network with a cable was a network. And we've seen a lot of changes. The one thing that's really consistent, though, if you think about the role of a CIO or a CISO or executive, an IT executive in a large enterprise, these companies struggle with what we call big consulting bloat. Mm-hmm. So how do we get tools and technology in the hands of cybersecurity leaders or technology leaders and let them stay in control of their environment and offer a different alternative where we have great people that are unlocking the power of that technology, but doing it in a more streamlined and agile and cost-effective manner. So now that mission over 27 years or how we go about it has changed a lot for sure. The technology has changed a lot. What we were doing 27 years ago isn't what we're doing today, but the premise is still the same. How do we help an enterprise get the kind of people and talent and tools and operations that they need at a much more fast, easier, and cost-effective way?
And the talent piece is the section of that mix, if you like, that really interests me, because people are constantly still talking to me about, you know, the challenge of attracting the right talent, retaining the right talent. Depending on which sort of generation we're talking about in the workplace now, you know, they'll typically want to move around into different roles. The cost of attraction and retention is huge, continues to skyrocket. And there is clearly a shortage in the cybersecurity space of the right resources that we need. So tell us a little bit about this talent attraction and retention, because that's one of the basic premises, isn't it, around the way in which I think your business has been founded. And certainly, and we'll come on to it, but you wrote a book as well, which is about the connection between people and profit. So I'm intrigued to hear more about this.
Well, on the one hand, we have technology, right? That's always evolving. You know, I just mentioned that what we were doing, the first project we ever did was running around the United States with, you know, floppy disk in our hand and loading them into servers. That technology is very different today. But at the end of it, at the heart of it all is people. So technology, I believe, is just really pure potential. There's a power that technology can use to improve our lives, improve our businesses, you know, to make a difference in whatever our mission happens to be at whatever organization that we find ourselves. But at the end of the day, it's people who have to unlock that technology. So we found that there's a couple of things, especially in a large enterprise space where we play in. I mean, that's what we do really well. Mm-hmm. How do we help the world's biggest organizations quickly execute their most ambitious projects is how we think about it. Well, that's done with people. Yes, it's technology, but there's a lot of cliches out there about how culture trumps strategy, and you know, you can come up with a dozen of them really quickly. So what we've always focused on is this one thing: how do we find really great people and use the company as a vehicle to elevate their lives? So that's really what our purpose is at Intelligence. How do we look at the people that walk in here every day, the people that come to work here, regardless of what technology they're passionate about and how they want to go about it? How do we look at them as an individual, a human being that says, you know, you have personal goals, you have business ambitions, career goals, you have family, you have community. How do we use the company as a vehicle to help you get where you want to go? And so I believe that that culture attracts the kind of folks that are ambitious, that are hungry to learn, that are eager to move up in whatever way that they define moving up in their lives. And I think it's our job, really, as leaders, and especially here in our organization, is to create that environment so that people can thrive. Now, we get that right a lot. Sometimes we don't. But the basic intention and premise is still the same. And the book, we, you know, kind of talk about this, like I had this epiphany, this manifesto, like, you know, what am I here to do? Because the longer I've done this, the more technology we've seen. Like, I'm not the smartest technology tool in the drawer. But what I am is really good at reading people and finding winners and leaders and people that want to grow. And I really feel like that every human being that comes into our organizations has a set of skills and ambitions and talent in the way that they go about their lives. And if we can just help them see that and mirror that back to them and provide the opportunities and the tools to do that, that they'll thrive in their life, they'll thrive in their technology career. And that's really what the premise is. It's not that much more difficult than that.
And people listening to this will probably be smiling wryly at the end of that. You know, it's not much more difficult than that, when certainly in the security space anyway, there is this constant need to be attracting people, not necessarily knowing where they're going to come from. And sometimes perhaps not being able to find exactly the right fit. And that, for me, I've always seen as being a very sort of corporate-centric perspective. And one of the things that strikes me about what you're talking about here is that you're talking about a very people-centric perspective. Doesn't mean to say that the two can't coexist. In fact, if you get it right, it's a very happy marriage. But the essence, the challenge, if you like, is trying to ensure that we can get those fits right. And you mentioned earlier that you didn't always get it right. So tell us a little bit about how do you get it right more times than you get it wrong?
Well, you know, if we could take a step back and let's look at the problem, let's figure out what problem that we're trying to solve. There's lots of data out there. Cybersecurity Ventures says that there's 3+ million open, unfilled cybersecurity jobs around the world. And if you look at it from the perspective of a CISO, they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place, right? So we all know that there's a proliferation of cybersecurity attacks, and the attack surfaces keep getting wider and more complex. And at the same time, their organizations are limiting either headcount or budget. So that makes it difficult to fill roles. And then there's this kind of third thing that I think is happening, is just the complexity and the proliferation of tools that are out there to choose from. I mean, I've seen data, and I can't remember what the source is, but it could be from, you know, the average enterprise has somewhere between 12 and 50 different cybersecurity tools out there. Mm-hmm. And there are new ones coming along every single day. So if you look at it from the perspective of the CISO, how do I find, I think there's, you know, how do I find the people in my organization that are going to get me where I need to go, but I'm also having to deal with budget constraints and tool changes and technology evolutions. And so I'm old school. I started back when, you know, the way technology worked, it came in a box. Everything was a box, and there was a service attached to it most of the time. And that's how you stood up a technology solution. And it wasn't that complicated. It got more complicated as things started to evolve. But in essence, the industry has always tried to attack the problem the same way: sell a box, deliver a service. And then the cloud comes along and it changes everything. Because in the cloud, it's services first, and then product adoption, consumption, optimization comes second. And what we have is an entire industry that is having a very difficult time making that shift to a cloud-driven services first, product second model. And then you layer on the fact that you've got all these cybersecurity challenges that we're all very aware of, and then it creates really two problems. One, you have a talent shortage problem, and then there's a skills gap problem, because many large enterprises have a lot of folks already in their cybersecurity shop, but there's a new set of tools coming along. There's new rules. There's things that are changing all the time that it just makes it really difficult for a CISO to kind of not only find the talent, but make sure we've got the right training and development paths, and we're creating the right culture to really accomplish what we're trying to do, which is protect our people, our data, and our organizations. So for the last 20 years, we've been going about it a little bit different way, which is to a big part of our business is providing white label services to cybersecurity vendors, other technology vendors that are trying to sell their products and services into the largest of large enterprises. They're usually their top 5% customers. And these product companies don't want to invest in a services operation. It's a different business model. So they come to us, and we show up and we say, hey, I'm Steve with XYZ company, and I'm here to design, deploy, optimize, whatever I'm here to do. And so we've run that playbook for about 20 years, and it's been very successful for us. But what we're seeing now is a really different challenge. And the challenge in the enterprise is, if I'm not the top 5% spender at a product company, where do I get the product company level services? And so we've launched a new program so that we can go to a CISO and say, look, you've got this technology tool set that you have all this unlocked potential or power in your hands. And we've been trained by the manufacturer, vetted by the manufacturer. We're running their playbook, their services methodology. And so here's what we can do for you. We can help you stay in control of your own environment. Yes, it's about people, but let us help you, first of all, get the products up and going so that you can unlock the promise of what you bought them for. And then let us Sherpa your people through leveling up a set of capabilities so that they can do it themselves. And so it's just a different way of solving a people problem. Inside our organization, though, we have tools and methodology that I think that we've been honing for a long time to look for, vet, and train and upskill people that can, you know, fly these big airplanes, so to speak. And so I think we're constantly looking at how we do that, how we get better at that, how do we identify. But what we really found over almost three decades, especially in the enterprise space, that there's three things that really, really matter. Number one is the people we're looking for have to be really maniacal about the technology at their end. If you talk to them, they can't shut up about what they're doing because they love it so much. It's just who they are. Number two, in the enterprise space, we found that it really takes someone that's been around in a big enterprise environment for a decade or more to know how to navigate the complexities of a large, especially large hybrid cloud global IT environment. And I'll tell you how we do that in a second. And the third thing that we found that we really need to think about is, you know, what are their soft skills? What's their emotional intelligence? Can they deliver presentations? Can they speak confidently about the solutions that they're developing? Can they deal with conflict? Because lots of things go wrong in an IT environment. And so we found that that kind of combination of deep technical passion, a lot of enterprise experience, and people that really have emotional intelligence are what create the kind of ideal workforce that I think we're looking for, but also our clients are looking for.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. I think the key piece there for me that you mentioned is this emotional intelligence piece. Because, you know, gone are the days when you could just have one of the segments that you've just been talking about. You know, back in the day, you could, if you were very, very good from a technical standpoint, you could have zero emotional intelligence and people would put up with it because you were the guy to go to when, you know, this box needed to talk to that box and, you know, don't talk to Charlie. He's a little bit strange, but he'll make it work. Emotional intelligence is something, again, that certainly from our members' perspective, I think people are struggling somewhat to come up with. because a lot of security people don't have that, haven't seen the need to have it. The way they've entered the industry has not sort of encouraged some of those things. And I've talked a lot about the need to bring people in from outside of the traditional areas from a cyber standpoint, so that you do have that emotional intelligence. But listening to you talking about, you know, this need for somebody who's got 10 plus years enterprise experience, who's maniacal about technology, who's got emotional intelligence, I'm sure that there will be CISOs listening to this, thinking to themselves, wow, you know, this guy has a complete herd of unicorns that he's working with there, because these people just don't exist. How are you finding them? That's the essence. Yeah. You know, where do you go hunting for these?
I think that's really the secret sauce, but it's actually so simple, it's almost embarrassing to talk about. So for lack of any sophisticated, you know, three-letter acronym, we just call it the train-up program. And here's what we mean by that. When you think about a new technology that's come out, let's just say, you know, cloud security, you know, we weren't talking about cloud security 5 years ago. If we were, no one really knew what it meant. And then all of a sudden, you know, a CISO or an organization will buy a product, a cloud security product, and they're saying, hey, we're looking for internally, they're looking for folks that can come into the organization that have eons of experience on this brand new technology, but it just isn't there. So here's a stupid analogy, but I like to use it because it's how I think about the business. It's really just to simplify it. Let's say that you're a new airline, or you have a new airline route that you want to go from Houston to Paris, and you're short of pilots to fly, you know, the big Dreamliner or the big Airbus, you know, from here to there. It's a different operation. So what we do is we go look for people that have been flying 737s most of their career. And they do it really well. Maybe they fly for Southwest Airlines. I don't know. But they're deeply passionate about flying, and they're really good at it. And all we need to do is just kind of upskill them in a short period of time just to fly a different airplane. It's still piloting. It's still flying. That's what we do. So if you think about just the evolution of technology and the things that we're doing, all we're doing constantly at Intelligence is just upskilling people in the shortest possible time. If you were a doctor and you've been doing a certain type of surgery and a new technology comes out, you don't relearn everything that you've done or scrap it. You just add to it. You go to the device maker, the technology maker, and you learn a new skill set. And so we figured out how to do that actually in a very short period of time. So if a client comes to us, or one of the product vendors comes to us and says, hey, we've got a lot of traction on this new product. Our customers need help. We don't have enough people. We can't hire. We can't get headcount. We can't get budget. We need you to spin up a workforce for us. That's what we do. We go recruit the talent that we need using the criteria we talked about before. And then we work closely with the IT vendor, the product company, to use their technology, their training, their methodology, their playbook to spin up our people very quickly, just if they were going to do it on their own. So that's also what we do for the enterprise, is a lot of times we already have those people with us. And so I wouldn't say that it's not a corral full of unicorns, because the joke is, you know, which unicorn do you know is actually in a corral? They're just very different people. You can't, you know, they kind of march to the beat of their own drum. But if you can create a positive experience and show them, most of these folks that are deeply embedded in their technology skill set, they're hungry to learn more. And so the way that we get them interested in what we're trying to do to fly the bigger airplane, so to speak, or learn a new technology, or to move to the next iteration of what's next, is just promise them that, look, Intelligence works with the world's largest organizations that are doing the biggest, juiciest, leading edge projects. And if you come to work for us, not only will we upskill you, but here's what you have the opportunity to work on. Instead of, you know, asking them to collect wood, we're teaching them to long for the sea. That's what we do, is show them the possibility of how the projects that we work on really could change their career, change the trajectory of their career, impact their family, their future. And it really works for us.
Now, you've also written a book, I mentioned it a bit earlier, Steve, called Above the Line, How the Golden Rule Rules the Bottom Line, which I've read, and I have to say was, I mean this in a very positive way, it was a very easy read. it sort of drags you in. It uses very simple to understand language. It doesn't, I think, pretend to be anything other than what it is, which is an entertaining story that sort of leads the reader through. But in essence, it's about how putting people first not only just makes a difference in people's lives, and we talked a little bit about that already, but I think more importantly, perhaps from a corporate bottom line perspective, also boosts revenue and profits. And that is something at the moment that, of course, is really trying the imagination of very many chief executives and finance directors and corporate executives all around the world. How do we boost revenue and profits? And the answer, one of the answers would seem to be, according to your book, by putting people first. So just explain for listeners a little bit about how you arrived at that conclusion, if I could put it that way, that again, you know, you've said before, some of the things you do are pretty simple, but perhaps not that simple if you don't know how to do it. So how do we go about boosting our revenue and profits through people?
I have this very simple view of life. By the way, if you read the book, hopefully you get a sense of that I have no original ideas in that book. They're just things that I learned along the way. They're things that are available to every single one of us. And
but you know, sorry to interrupt you, but you know the great thing that I liked about it, because I get a lot of these things, and the things that bore me rigid, these people who constantly tell me that, but in their book keep referring to other people, you know, and so you're always looking for footnotes and that kind of thing, and you don't do that. You tell a story. So, you know, that's why I liked it, because it's a story that you're telling, mm-hmm. and it's educational at the same time, which is, I think, not a bad read.
Well, thank you. The idea is really about putting people first. It is so simple. As a new father, 20-some-odd years ago, so my oldest daughter, it will be 24 in a couple of months, and my wife and I, we have 4 kids, and I feel like my number one job as a father is not to get them to think the things that I think or do the things that I do. For God's sakes, I make tons of mistakes and they're watching me all the time, which is kind of a scary notion, but to really think about this phrase that I heard years ago. I think it was a story I heard from this book called The 7 Spiritual Laws of Success by Deepak Chopra. It really hit me when I was about to become a father. And he's talking about, I think, the law of Dharma. I can't remember exactly, but I listened to this section over and over again, and these words really stuck with me. He said, look, I would tell my kids over and over again, don't worry about getting good grades. Don't worry about getting into the best schools. Don't even worry about getting a job. For God's sakes, if you can't get a job, I'll provide for you. But your number one mission in life is to figure out who you are and why you're here. And so I've taken that to heart with my own children, and I've said this to them, hopefully in ways that stick. I think they're in their teenage years. There's a lot of eye rolling. Oh, Dad. But really, it's true. They're here to do something. They're not here to do what I think they should do. They're not here to do what, you know, their mom thinks they should do. They're here to get on their mission. And I think as parents, our job is just to hold up the mirror so that they can see themselves. And I mean, not hold up the mirror to me, but to turn it around and hold up the mirror to them so that we can give them validation and support and to think about, you know, who are you and why you're here? Well, I think, you know, as kids, we're all like that. We grow up, we become adults. Those adults find their way into our organization, and it's really no different. I think my job, this sounds silly because we don't use the word employee, but I always think CEO means chief employee officer. And we don't call our people employees, we call them team members. But my job is to look at every team member and make sure that we have the tools and systems in place inside our organization so that each of our team members can identify who they are and what they do best and how they go about doing it and find a way into our organization so that they can be the best person that they're supposed to be or thrive in the way that they're supposed to thrive. But you also have to temper that, Steve, I think, with like the reality of kind of how the world of work works now, which is they're only going to be here for a short period of time.
Right.
They're not going to be here for 49 years like my grandfather, you know, when he grew up working for the telephone company. They're going to be here for a short period of time. So we have taken this idea that it really doesn't matter how long people are here. If they come in for an interview and they're here for an hour, or they go through an onboarding for a week, a month, a year, a decade, it doesn't matter how long people are here. Our only job to drive a people-centric culture is to give them an experience that allows them to be elevated in some way along that way. So every conversation counts, every moment counts, and I think every person that comes in our door has to count as well. Now, a lot of people, especially IT people, and I've been around them a long time, scoff at that because they're data people, not people people, or they scoff at the notion that that sounds a little squishy or whatever. But when people kind of step back and think, well, that's the way I want to be treated. I do things a different way. I march to the beat of my own drum. I learn things in this way, not that way. I mean, who wants to be shoved into a box and told what to do every day? I think people come to work, and it's just one of the vignettes in our lives that we can find out how we can thrive. And people that are passionate about technology, and especially cybersecurity, can do that if we create the environment that allows them to find out who they are and how they can work best in a team environment, and to give them the tools, the technology, the training, and the opportunities to find that passion that they're really all about. And it's a very difficult thing to do because we all work for someone, right? A board, a C-suite, or whatever. And we have to balance out how do we help our people thrive and yet get the organization where it needs to go, whether it's, you know, protecting our attack surfaces or protecting our environment or cutting our budgets or whatever the complex problems are that we're all facing every day. And I don't see those as separate things. I think they're inextricably linked together, that if we can help our people thrive, we'll help our organizations thrive. It's really, really that simple. Hard to execute, but pretty simple in concept.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think the concept is very simple. I think what it also is crying out for is much higher degree of emotional intelligence. We talked about this earlier, but amongst the leadership, because people have to understand that it isn't just about the bottom line. It's almost counterintuitive, I think, to some, where you also have to potentially step back from the bottom line to focus on a different element of the business, trusting that that is going to then reap a bottom line benefit. Mm-hmm. I think that old school would sort of indicate that no, what you do is you focus on the bottom line, and you know, that's how you get your result. But actually, I think going forwards, the only way to achieve that is by doing what we're talking about now. And I'm not sure that there are many leaders out there who are able to do it just yet. I don't know what your thought is on that. But
well, look, I was visiting with one of our C-suite customers the other day about this very topic. If you think about a CISO, a CIO, or if you even think about our product company partners, you know, the leader of the professional services organization, which is really an internal consulting company, where did they all grow up? They all grew up in technology. Most of them start off as a programmer, a developer, a network engineer, a cybersecurity specialist, maybe a project manager, and they kind of grow up in this data-driven world, which is very black and white in its thinking, you know, and I'm paraphrasing or generalizing, so to speak. Uh-huh. But now the way the world works is just very different. This is a very interconnected society. We're interdependent upon one another. And so one of my kind of personal, I wouldn't call it a mission, but it's kind of like, how do I go in and look at from my customer's perspective, just if they were my, you know, working here at our own team, how do I help that person get where they want to go? And the only way that I can do that is not only do I have to understand what they're trying to accomplish in their business, but I have to see the human that's on the other side. Every one of us has people, situations, events, challenges, and opportunities that we're all working on. And so if I take the time to get to know the person that I'm working with and not only understand what they're trying to accomplish on their business priorities, but also see them as a human that has strengths and weaknesses and challenges and opportunities, how do I help them become the hero of their own story? And I think for CISOs and CSOs and CISOs, I think we're at a career-defining moment, to tell you the truth, mm-hmm. because every business is a cybersecurity business now. Whether you, it doesn't even matter what you do right. for a living. If you, even if you make pies, you're in the cybersecurity business on the side. Yep. So how do we teach technology leaders, cybersecurity leaders, a kind of a, you know, a different way to think about their business? How do we get them to see the talented and forward-thinking technical professionals they have in their business as also human beings? Those are skills that we can teach and coach and help people develop that kind of muscle that if they can start being vulnerable and transparent and show their own emotional intelligence, the rest of their organization will follow. I'm a huge believer in this, and a lot of people aren't, and that's okay. What we find, by the way, is that companies that, especially these product companies that think about it the old way, that cybersecurity professionals or technology professionals are just kind of the tail of the end of the dog of the product set and have a kind of closed-minded view of both the integration of technology and in human capital and emotional intelligence, those people are not thriving, by the way. Their organizations aren't thriving. They're missing their goals. It's just, we find that those things work hand in hand. And cybersecurity leaders, technology leaders that are open to the possibility of marrying and integrating technical skills with emotional intelligence are the ones that are thriving. They become the heroes of their own story.
Steve, it's been fascinating talking to you. Some really good insights there, and I think food for thought for many of our listeners around perhaps changing or at least trying some of the things you've just been talking about. You know, what's there to lose and probably everything to gain. So thank you so much for spending the time. It's been fascinating listening to you. And for anybody listening who does want to read the book, it's called Above the Line, How the Golden Rule Rules the Bottom Line. And as I said earlier, it is a very, very simple read, which is a good thing. So thank you very much, Steve.
Thank you, Steve. It's great to be here and I appreciate the time.
Thanks to this week's guest, Steve Satterwhite. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast, and we'd be pleased if you'd consider sharing the episode. To become a member, get in touch with Steve directly at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or on LinkedIn. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. Don't miss our other podcast, Dear InfoSec, sharing conversations with members about the real-world applications of ISF research. The ISF podcast is produced by TalkBox Productions and Tavia Gilbert. Thanks for listening.